Our next presentation is factors associated with parents' intention to follow pediatric recommendations for their child's weight loss. This presentation is by Catherine Holdsworth, and she is a doctoral candidate at Temple University School of Public Health in Philadelphia. She received a master's degree in nursing from LaSalle University and is a nurse practitioner providing primary health care services to adults and adolescents with HIV. She became interested in obesity and nutrition research as HIV transitioned from a terminal to a chronic illness, and this population's concerns shifted from wasting and weight loss to obesity and metabolic disease. She is also working on tobacco and obesity research at the Health Behavior Research Clinic at Temple University. Ms. Holdsworth presents her dissertation research today.
Thank you very much. I also want to thank you for inviting me and offering me the opportunity to speak in this section. For a few years, I've been in the HIV section, and I'm not new to public health like Catherine, but I'm new to this section, so I appreciate this opportunity. We're going to switch gears a little bit. We heard from three very powerful programs as far as environmental changes and changes on a broad base to try to raise healthier children. I'm going to now focus on an individual level because to be able to most effectively prevent obesity in children, we need to remember that and try to get it reinforced in the home. So we're going to be looking at the home site for preventing obesity. I have no financial relationships to disclose. A little bit of the background. We're all familiar with these statistics, 55 million overweight children in the world. And 20 to 30% of them are classified as obese. The World Health Organization has a little bit of a different classification than we do here in the U.S. In the U.S., we define it as overweight for those children whose BMI is greater than or equal to the 95th percentile for age. So their BMI is calculated the same way with height and weight, and then the BMI is plotted on the growth chart. And so those children whose BMI is greater than the 95th percentile are classified as overweight. Children who are found to be in the area between the 85th and 95th percentile are just at risk. So what is it about overweight children and families? Because treating and preventing for children, it doesn't just involve the child as a patient, but the entire family, the parents, are included in that as a patient. When you're a pediatric provider, you're treating the entire family. It does represent a complex risk factors for pediatric obesity. Of course, you know, it's not rocket science at this point. The risk of obesity is increased when the parents are obese. And particularly, we've been discussing the environment, but what's most disturbing is that as we have 30% of our children who are overweight or obese, the more friends they have that are overweight, if their family's overweight and their friends are overweight, they're less likely to see themselves as overweight or to perceive that they are overweight. So parents do play a central role in encouraging these healthy lifestyles that if we're shooting at it from an environmental level, we need to have reinforced in the home as well. We know that with parental involvement, there are several problems. The parents' weight and the parents' perception of their own weight and their child's weight may predict readiness to make these health behavior changes that are so necessary in the family. Studies have shown that targeting parents as the main intermediaries for change in the child is optimal, along with any kind of outside school programs. There's still a great need to target the parent on an individual level. And unfortunately, many healthcare providers, pediatric healthcare providers, have reported that the obstacle in the management of childhood obesity is the lack of parental engagement. There's a lot of attrition in many of the weight treatment programs. So what's necessary is to engage the entire family in this. And weight loss in overweight parents may also predict the weight loss in their overweight children. So that assisting parents to support the interventions that we feel that are necessary to prevent childhood obesity will actually necessitate changes in the parents themselves. So we really just can't treat the child in an isolated way. We have to include the parent in those health behavior changes as well, and that's really where the difficulty comes in. We can see that parental modeling of eating and exercises definitely impacts the success of treatment in many of these overweight children. So for my research, the study aim of this of my dissertation research is to describe the associations between the parents' intention, just the intention to make those lifestyle changes for their child, and first of all, their self-efficacy for following the instructions, for following the recommendations of the providers. Also, we're looking at the level of parental depression that may affect their intention as well. And then finally, the parents' perceptions of weight, perceptions of their self-perceptions of weight, perceptions in their child. And also, I have a secondary aim to describe the relationship of parents' perception of the weight of the provider. It's well known that if a medical provider discloses healthy behaviors in themselves, as far as healthy lifestyles are concerned, that the patient, the adult patient, is more likely to try to adopt those healthy behaviors. There has been a little bit of research. There was a small study that showed that if the provider was overweight, the adult patient was more likely to follow their instructions for weight loss. And it seems maybe counterintuitive. There's sort of two ways of looking at that. It's pretty much, when I read that, it was sort of like when you look at someone and they're giving you advice on something, and if the person's very thin, you're like, why am I going to follow your instructions? You don't know anything about being overweight. Conversely, we've seen that with studies, say, with smoking. If you have a physician who's smoking and they're trying to counsel you to stop smoking, you're, oh, yeah, okay, I see you can do it. You can't do it, so how should I be able to do it? So I really wanted to sort of tease this out and to see if we could find anything that might support either of those studies. So my hypotheses are that parents who exhibit greater self-efficacy for adherence to the advice will have greater intention to follow the advice. Also, parents who report higher levels of depressive symptoms will have lower self-confidence in following the instructions of the provider. And finally, that parents who perceive the provider to be overweight were more likely to show intention to follow that provider's instructions. The outcomes of interest that we looked at, the first one, of course, is the parent's intention. And just keep in mind that we're just focusing on their intention to follow the recommendations that the pediatric provider has laid down. This is a dichotomous variable. We're looking at their ambivalence or their definite intention. And then also the self-efficacy for adherence to those providers' recommendations. This is a continuous variable. We're looking at the mean score on something called the Weight Efficacy Lifestyle Scale. And so we looked at the total score, and also there's five subscales. This was a cross-sectional survey of 100 parents of overweight children attending pediatric practice in an inner city. Their child had to be between the ages of 6 and 12, because still at this age, the parents are a significant, have significant impact in what the child's eating. Their BMI, the child's BMI had to be greater than the 95th percentile for age. So we're really looking at the children who are very overweight already. The parents were weighed and measured. We didn't take self-report of their weight. They were weighed and measured. The BMI was calculated. And then they completed three questionnaires after they had visited the physician or nurse practitioner with their child. What we used was, first of all, the family demographics questionnaire, which was a researcher-developed survey just assessing for basic demographics, but also we asked questions regarding the child's health comorbidities that are typically weight-related, high blood pressure, diabetes, orthopedic maladies, asthma, sleep apnea, and then there were a few items that assessed for the parent's intention to follow the provider's instructions. There were also two items that assessed for the parent's perception of their weight, their own weight, their child's weight, and the provider's weight. We used the CESD, which is a validated tool for measuring their level of depressive symptoms, and then, as I alluded to earlier, the Weight Efficacy Lifestyle Questionnaire. This has been validated in various populations, and it assesses confidence in maintaining the diet under certain stressful or really certain emotional situations. It looks a bit like this. There's a five-factor model that the five factors are negative emotions, food availability, social pressure, physical discomfort, and then positive activities. So parents are asked to check off how confident they feel in certain situations that they're able to maintain the diet that the provider has prescribed, or that they can maintain the child's diet. For instance, I can maintain my child's diet even when I have to say no to others. That, of course, would be in the social pressure category. So what did we see? This population actually, you can see here, almost 60% of the parents that we surveyed were parents of daughters, and about 43% were parents of sons. This population was about 75% African American, which is what we see in Philadelphia in an urban center, and 21% Hispanic. The parents' education, actually, 81% did have a high school diploma, and so it was just a little less than 20% that had not completed high school. There was really no difference, just based in these demographics, between those whose intention was ambivalent and those whose intention was more definite. But when we got to another part, I just wanted to sort of draw your attention to, you see, as I said earlier, it's really not rocket science, you know, overweight parents have overweight children. This population was 42% obese and 31% morbidly obese, which the parent had a BMI greater than or equal to 40. So we're starting out behind the eight ball at this point. There were only six parents who were normal weight, and there were zero parents who were underweight. If you look here, you see why perception seems to be such an issue. Almost 80% of the parents didn't know that their kid, you know, didn't perceive their child to be overweight. And certainly almost 60% didn't think that they were overweight themselves. So, again, you know, struggling with messages about nutrition and exercise, public health messages may not be getting to where they need to be. What I found interesting here, the only significance, again, in the two groups, between the two groups, between the ambivalent and the definite, was when it came to the child's health comorbidity. So what this is showing us here, that there was significantly different, is that if your child had another health-related problem, as I said, asthma, hypertension, diabetes, you were more likely to, your intentions were more likely to be definite, to follow the instructions. And that sort of sounds like that would make sense, but later on when we get to the multivariate, we'll see what happens. Again, descriptive, the mean depressive symptoms were 16. This is the cutoff for the CESD when you're assessing depressive symptoms. You probably know it's not really a diagnostic tool for depression, but above 16, if their score is higher than 16, that would indicate that you need further evaluation for perhaps a diagnosis. Not significantly different with depressive symptoms and intention, but when you look at the self-efficacy scores, you see that they all do impact intention, so that the mean, you know, if you're, the higher your mean was on your self-efficacy score, of course, the more likely you are to have a definite intention. So in predicting parents' intention with self-efficacy, what is this saying? Logistic regression, when we adjusted for child's age, gender, race, parents' education, the model that showed the most significance included child health comorbidities and income as well, and the others didn't add anything to the model. So what this is telling us for all six of these, for the total and the five subscores, is that the higher you scored on your self-efficacy on the total, the more likely you are to have a definite intention. What came out is that actually the opposite. If your child had another comorbid illness, again, hypertension or diabetes, you were less likely to intend, and that was significant. So although in the univariate, in the chi-square, we saw that it looked like it was going to be a significant factor, when we factored in all the other, when we adjusted for age and gender and race, it actually had the opposite effect. And this was surprising to me also, that income, the higher your income, the less likely you are to have a definite intention. So this needs further bearing out, further research. Predicting self-efficacy based on depressive scores, again, this was actually the linear regression and the stepwise adjusted again for child's gender, ethnicity, and the parent's BMI. They didn't alter the power in any way. The total well score and each of the five subscales the higher your depressive symptoms, the lower your self-efficacy. Again, this legal guardian status was interesting as well as far as self-efficacy is concerned, but both of these, I'll explain, are rather intuitive as well. The legal guardian status I broke down was basically, this population was about 79% moms, and the rest were either dads, grandparents, step-parents, a couple of legal guardians. So it really became legal guardian status was either mom or something other than mom. So what this is saying is that if you were not the mom, your self-efficacy, your scores were lower. So, you know, moms had a higher self-efficacy. If you're not the mom, you're less, you have less confidence in being able to control that child's diet, as well as the child's age. The older the child got, the less self-efficacy the parent had. Your kid gets older, you know, you have less confidence in what you're going to be able to control in certain situations. So this was what we used for parents' perception, and this is actually what we used for several of the perception items. First, there was a question asking you to describe your physician, the physician or nurse practitioner, as from underweight, a 5-point Likert scale, from underweight to very overweight. And then there was another item that we used, this FRS, the figure rating scale, that's been used several times for assessing a person's perception, and you asked them to check off what their doctor looked like or their nurse practitioner looked like. And what we found in the logistic regression after adjusting again for these demographics is that if the parent perceived the provider to be overweight, they were less likely to show a definite intention. So that sort of bared out other studies, but certainly not the study that I first alluded to in the beginning. And again here, if the child had another sickness, if the child had another illness, they were less likely to intend, and both of them were significant. So this needs further research. Again, the discussion now, just the perception of weight. We still have a poor perception of weight and weight-related medical problems that remain at odds despite our public health messages. We see that parents' self-efficacy and self-confidence will predict their intention to follow the advice even before we've even tried to modify the behavior. So the parents haven't even attempted this. I'm not looking at any follow-up. Just, are you thinking about following the provider's instructions? And that their depressive symptoms decrease their self-confidence to reinforce what's going on at home. So, you know, this is really something that we need to train medical providers in counseling techniques that might be more encompassing so that we can have a more effective impact at home. Again, our mass communication efforts just have to stay as stronger than ever because we're still not presenting clear associations between weight and weight-related illnesses. Children who have weight-related illnesses, their parents are still evaluating their child as very healthy and really don't have a clue that their child's overweight and that this could be causing some of the problems. And further research in comprehensive family-centered weight treatment programs that definitely include the parents. I get in under the 2 minutes, right? Okay. Thank you very much. Do you have any questions? Okay. Oh, yes. Yes, I definitely do. In this study, we didn't evaluate what the messages that were being given from the provider, but clearly, you know, even when there's standards of what the provider needs to be saying and teaching, it varies. It varies from physician to physician, from physician to nurse practitioner, even within that same practice, just from reading medical notes and having discussions with the clinicians there, it does vary, even though we have pointed, you know, messages that we're supposed to be giving. So that is another study. I wanted to finish my dissertation, but that, I mean, definitely seeing if the physicians are following the standards of what we need to teach. Yes. Yes, that's very definitely a limitation. There's, you know, when I looked for scales, there weren't a lot of scales that were available that could be used in a general way, but that's definitely a limitation of this, is that they may not have been culturally appropriate for that population, that you know, that scale. Yes, Yeah, it's actually not just African Americans. Africans feel that way as well. In different parts, many cultures feel that, and that's sort of where I'm going with the message of with our public health messages. Because yes, it is. You know, we have this understanding that it might be culturally that people feel that they need to carry weight, but still culturally they're still having the other problems that come from overweight as well. So the messages have to be tailored to suit their needs, but nevertheless, even if we believe that we have to carry this weight around, it's still causing us health problems. So that's where I think our messages have to go. Oh, yes.
Did you look at all of the new research or other research in terms of the provider's self-perception of their weight and their ability to effectively communicate weight loss messages? It makes me think of the smoking stuff, where
right.
providers who smoke are less comfortable addressing smoking issues.
Yeah, when I looked, there's very little literature with providers and overweight, and I think we need to get more of that. And as I said, you know, that the one study, I was awfully surprised that the adults were more likely to follow their instructions or to think that they knew what they were talking about if the provider was overweight. So there definitely needs to be more looking at that, because we know that if we can disclose healthy behaviors, it works. But what about if we disclose, like when I say, you know, I've had that same problem with my kids as well. Like sometimes when we disclose as clinicians that we understand what's going on, then they're more likely to say, okay, well, she this is her life experience. I mean, your medical experience is awesome, but you've been there too. So I think we need more of that. Yes. Yeah, I was so surprised, because in the univariate, it looked like if your child was sick, you were more likely to intend. But then once in the multivariate, when we adjusted for income, you know, child's gender, age, all the other demographics, it flipped. And that's not clear why. That's postdoc. It's not clear why. I don't understand that. Maybe it's because, you know, there is some research, not in overweight, but in a child with other illnesses, and the parent's self-efficacy and the parent's intention to follow, you know, when the child has heart disease, when the child has asthma, there's a lot of studies that testing how the parent feels in being able to take care of the sick child. And so perhaps, you know, I'm not really sure, maybe they're focused on the other illness and not on the overweight, so that they're less likely to be worried about their weight problems and they're more worried about their high blood pressure, even though it's the same problem. So I'm just thinking that perhaps they're more worried about the kid, you know, his asthma, he's got his inhalers, all this stuff that I'm overwhelmed with taking care of, and we're putting weight on the back burner, so they're less likely to be concerned about that. You know, I don't know if that's what it is or not. A lot of times, there's still the thing, you know, we talked about culturally what it's like for different cultures. There's still the thing with children that they'll grow out of it. They don't realize they're growing into it. So, you know, I'm not sure what it is. I can only guess.
Mm-hmm. All of this was predicated on the parents having been told that their child needs to be on a diet. Having heard many of those things, they often are, your child needs to eat less, and that's the entire diet message. What kind of diet message were they getting? Were they getting something they could actually implement, and they felt like they knew how to do, and the doctor had given them?
Yeah, see, this is the problem. Just from in this clinic, when I saw what the handouts were, when I spoke to the nurse practitioners and spoke to the physicians and saw the notes, they were getting a little bit more than that, but there was nothing uniform, really. You know, it varied from provider to provider. So there were, you know, they got handouts. They got, actually, since this was a ambulatory practice, it wasn't a weight treatment center. They did get referrals to the weight treatment center. Now, I don't know what those follow-ups are yet. And so I don't know, you know, in that respect, we haven't assessed the exact messages. And as I said, I think that's very, very important to assess the message itself. Absolutely. Right. Okay, thanks.
It looks like we're out of time. It is 2:00, so I'm going to go ahead and adjourn. But first, I'd like to thank the speakers one more time and give them a round of applause. If you have individual questions, I'm sure they can wait just a few minutes. Okay, great. Thank you.